Mini episode 636 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the FDH Lounge. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris, and it is our tremendous privilege to be able to welcome one of our greatest guests back to the show today. It is always a pleasure when you're able to speak with somebody affiliated with any kind of media or broadcast entity who, over a period of time through their service with that entity, really kind of comes to be synonymous with them. We were fortunate enough to do that recently here. We were able to have Bob Barker back on for his sixth appearance. I mean, there's a guy that when you thought of CBS for a long time was pretty much him, Walter Cronkite. I think you could say the same thing about Turner Sports and Ernie Johnson. It's a tremendous privilege to be able to have him back on the program here. We had him on for FDH Lounge mini episode number 100 back in the spring of 2012. Going to talk a little bit of baseball with a gentleman who, again, we are very privileged to have back on the show, Ernie Johnson. Welcome back to the show, sir. How are you today?
Rick, it is great to be back with you. How are you?
Oh, doing fine, thanks. I have really been looking forward to getting a chance to talk to you and catch up on some of the great stories that you have been covering. And certainly one of the big ones to lead with here would be recently, again, Back to the Future Day, when the Cubs were supposed to win the World Series. Instead, they get eliminated from the National League Championship Series. Maybe the most Cubs thing ever. I don't know. But what were your thoughts on that series? You had to have high expectations going in, two young, exciting teams. It didn't really turn out that way as far as being a prolonged back-and-forth struggle between them. Nevertheless, for your employer, it did very great ratings with the two markets involved for the four games there. But what was your sort of melange of thoughts when you were done with that series?
Well, I think as we began the series, Rick, and working with Cal Ripken and Ron Darling on that, it was it was the power that both sides possessed, the power arms that the Mets had and the power bats that that the Chicago Cubs have and their great young talent, and who would prevail in a situation like that. And as it turns out, the Cubs were no match for those arms that the Mets threw at them. It's a team in Chicago that hit a lot of home runs in that series against St. Louis, and most of those coming at Wrigley Field. And so I don't think anybody saw a sweep coming just based on what the two teams brought to the table. But, boy, the New York pitching was just sensational. And, of course, Daniel Murphy was in the midst of that historic role in the postseason.
Absolutely. A very heartbreaking regression to the mean for him and for Mets fans toward the end of the World Series. But, again, as you point out, they might not very well have been there without him and that great run that he had. And going into that series, I wonder if a little bit on your part, if there may have been a little bit of kind of surprise there, because when you look at the National League landscape in recent years, you look at the NLCS this year, no Cards, no Giants, no Dodgers, no Pirates. The teams that have been there the last couple of years, the Pirates haven't been as far as the NLCS, but you know what I mean, as far as the teams that have been kind of regularly in the mix. And instead, you get the two new kids in that round there. Were you at all surprised going into that series that it played out with two teams where the future is now?
Not really. I wasn't surprised that a team from the Central got there, because that was such a great division all year long. You had three teams with at least 97 wins, and you had Pittsburgh with 98. You had the Cardinals with 100. And those teams had knocked the bark off each other all year long. And so No, that was one of those things where it was the best division in the National League, and the only thing that surprised you maybe was the Mets getting by the Dodgers and having to when you looked at that series, that best of five going in, you say, is this Mets team capable of beating Kershaw and Greinke a couple of times, and because you knew you're going to have to do that a couple of times if you're going to advance. And so I think that's where everybody, you know, if you hadn't, and I realize that the postseason brings a lot of fans to the set who maybe not are fringe fans, but aren't paying great attention to the regular season. And you know, for them, maybe the appearance of these Mets young arms, these guys like Syndergaard and guys like DeGrom and Mats and you know, people had heard about Matt Harvey, certainly. That's where they showed themselves, and to beat the Dodgers and to beat Greinke and beat Kershaw, that was impressive. And so, it just worked out great. It was a great year for us to have the National League, in all honesty, you know, because we flip-flop between the American and the National, and when you have the Dodgers in it, and you have the Mets in it, and you have the Cubs in it, and the Cardinals, who are perennial powers, I mean, it was a great National League playoff year.
Absolutely, it was, yeah. And the market size and the established brand value of the teams involved there, no question about it.
Rick, it's good for baseball when, you know, mm-hmm. when the Cubs get in there. You know, baseball fans know the Cubs. They know their history. They know the heartache they've had and the long drought. And that's kind of one of those intriguing stories that just kind of draws you to it to see if maybe this would be the year. And they played so well under Joe Maddon. He got everything he could possibly get out of that young team. And, boy, you're going to hear from them for years to come.
Well, that's an interesting point, because when you look at the next couple of years, you look at the teams that could win not maybe just one World Series but two, it's really interesting that, to me, they would be on top of the list there. And everybody keeps focusing on 107 years. And, yeah, it's been that long, but it's really weird, isn't it, that they seem more likely to me to probably get two in the next couple of years than anybody else I could think of. They're set up so well. They're going to have more money coming available with the ballpark renovations there. I mean, it's an enviable position to be in, and maybe the most in baseball.
Yeah, well, they got to shore up the back end of their starting rotation for sure. I mean, certainly when you've got Jake Arrieta and John Lester as a 1-2 punch, that's pretty darn good. But you have to have more than that, and that's where I think the Mets, if they keep those guys together. I mean, I've lived down here in Atlanta, and I witnessed, you know, what a great pitching staff can do for you for years and years and years when you had Maddox and Glavine and Smoltz and Avery and that bunch and. Boy, I mean, there was never an easy series if you were facing that team in the regular season. I mean, you know, you were getting one or two of those guys at least, and it can be the same way with the Mets. I mean, if they're able to, if they are able to score runs and make their offense as potent as the pitching staff is, man, then look out for New York.
Well, they did it the developmental way, very, very slowly there with the Sandy Alderson regime. And what's very interesting is, the general manager of my team, John Hart, now moving on to Atlanta all these years later, from a recent appearance on the show, I know Chip Carey, your old colleague, was saying, look out for the Braves once they get into their new ballpark. So I don't know. Is that just hometown broadcaster optimism, or do you think that they may be poised for a surge 2017, 2018, around then?
Yeah, I think that's what they're looking at around here, because certainly they went in the rebuilding mode they took the lumps they thought they were going to get this year in Atlanta. But sure, I think that's kind of would be in the master plan. It was, you know, you when you're going to move into a new ballpark and you want to put a product on the field that's going to draw fans there. I mean, a park gets you there, gets fans there for the novelty. But then what keeps them there is winning. And so, yeah, that's, and I wouldn't doubt for a second what John Hart has in mind. He's a great baseball mind.
Absolutely. He did a tremendous job in Cleveland all those years ago, no question. But when you look at the American League here and this notion now of the Royals getting over the hump, winning the World Series, this notion in sports that it becomes a matter of copying what was successful and trying to go off of that blueprint. What do you think other teams are looking at developmentally when they see the Royals, things that they think that they want to emulate? What do you think are probably the more important elements to teams out there? The combination of the speed and the defense, the back end of the bullpen trying to get guys for the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning, jumping on good pitches earlier in the count. What do you think are the things that teams are probably looking at and saying, we got to do more of that?
I think the two things that jump out to me is, you know, kind of, you know, working the game backwards and saying, hey, let's set ourselves up so we make this a six-inning game. So then in the seventh, eighth, and ninth, our guys are untouchable. We saw that last year when we had the ALCS on Turner, how, boy, once you, you know, if you took a lead to the seventh inning, it was lights out. There was no way that you were going to hit Herrera. There was no way, he would nail down the seventh inning. Holland has kind of fallen off the closer role there for Wade Davis. But when you had Davis and then Holland last year, I mean, that was a combination you could not beat. But I think that's it, and I think putting the ball in play is the other thing. I mean, I just think not striking out, making the other team make a play. You never know what's going to happen, and you see in the World Series that it wasn't, really hard hit balls that were the, that told the tale of that tail end of that series. It was getting the ball in play, making the other guy make a play. You never know if somebody might boot something in a crucial situation. It came true in that series, so. I think those are the two things that jump out. I think teams have known a long time the speed element is there, but when you had guys like Dyson and Gore on Ned Yost's team that he could bring off the bench and make something happen on the base paths late, that, putting the ball in play and working from the back end of the bullpen on, that's been kind of the formula. And I think you are seeing teams out there who said, yeah, let's try to shorten the game to six innings and see how that works for us.
Well, to an extent, if that's going to be copied, it's sort of everything that's old is new again, because you go back to, and people tend to forget, except for the hardcore baseball fans, Mariano Rivera, his first year, he was the setup guy for John Wetland. That's what the
right.
Yankees did at the start of their run. And you got the Royals doing a similar model, and again, maybe even working the seventh inning into it, too, when
yes,
you look at Herrera
right.
and Madsen and guys like that. But what I'm wondering is, this is something I've said on the show previously, I wonder if this rings a little bit of a bell with you also. Not so much in terms of the raw athleticism that they have, but in terms of the relentlessness. Is there anything about this Royals team that reminds you of those turn-of-the-century Yankees, the way they keep coming at you?
Well, I mean, when you have a lineup like that that can hurt you from 1 through 9, that certainly helps. It's not like you're going to stand on the mound out there and especially come playoff time, look at somebody and say, hey, okay, my outs here are the 6, 7, and 8 guys, or I can, those have to be automatic outs for me. That's Kansas City doesn't allow you that kind of a luxury. And so I think having guys up and down the order who can hurt you, it doesn't have to be that they are going to hit the ball out of the park, but they're going to put the ball in play. And a guy like Ben Zobrist, who's so valuable on a team, who can play anywhere and coming up with big hits. So it's that kind of a vibe with Kansas City. And then I think they fed a little bit off of, last year, obviously Ned talked about the disappointment of not winning the World Series, but it's also when you look back at the wild card game when they came back to beat John Lester in Oakland, when you're down 7-3 in the eighth inning and it looks like the season's, a half hour away from being over. You draw from things like that. You feel like we've done this before, we can do it again. And so when you get in that situation again, you don't panic. You say, we're capable of doing this, we've done it before. With these guys in this lineup, and so I just think that feeds into it. Then you get a very confident bunch and a feeling on that team that look, you can't have us down enough because we're going to keep on battling.
Thank you so much for making time for us on a broadcast day, no less. You got the NBA on TNT coming up here, but again, thank you so much. It was a pleasure to catch up with you, sir. Looking forward to doing it again, hopefully sometime here. And have a great day. I really appreciate it.
Rick, it's been my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me on.
Oh, thank you, Ernie. I really appreciate it. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to this mini-episode of the FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.